I take a shot of Hennessy, now I'm strong enough to face the madness. Nickel bag full of cess weed laced with hash. Welcome, bienvenue, another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. MrShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, a.k.a. Gaston Lucien, Big Daddy Lebanon.
Oh, it's good.
I nearly forgot the new name. All right, today's episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on this day, November 26, 2025. Time and space. Today's episode is also rated R and F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. This podcast was not meant for you. All right. So before we start, let me send a shout out to all you listeners and gently or kindly applaud yourselves. Yay! Celebrate your own self. Now, the reason I do that is because if you're my target audience, then you're probably the kind of person, you might be the kind of person, not making an accusation, but you might be the kind of person like me who has a habit of celebrating everyone except your own self. And if this happens to be your first time listening, welcome. Yeah, I won't do that like we do in church and ask you to stand up and introduce yourself and give me all your personal information and make you feel awkward and cringe and shit like that. No, we weren't going to do that because it's a podcast. But I am going to acknowledge that I'm shouting out, I'm also welcoming those of you who clicked on this podcast by mistake thinking I was the other Shut Up Podcast. Yeah, I'll understand if you feel the need to leave, but if you stick around, here's hoping I say something that resonates and allows us to make history. ShutUpPodcast.com is my website. ShutUpPodcast411@gmail.com is the email address. It's my email address. Just a final note to say that if at any point in this podcast you find yourself thinking, damn, that was terrible, that was awful, well, it's my goddamn podcast. It's my goddamn podcast. You know, I'm realizing I'm violating every rule of content creation. First, I'm telling you who should not be listening to, and then I'm saying that, hey, you might find this whack, but, you know, fuck you, it's my podcast. So I'm realizing I'm being a little, is the word orthodox, being different? But like I said, it's my goddamn podcast. And, actually, I feel the need to acknowledge that verse that I recited at the beginning is from a rap song by Tupac. It Ain't Easy. It's like one of my favorite songs written by the late, great Tupac. Tupac Shakur, Machiavelli the Don. And I just realized, go through my catalog, my title episode catalogs, and noticed that this is going to be the fourth time I've made reference to that song, or you like reference as in used it as a title. But yeah, whatever. Oh, right. Okay. I forgot the title of today's episode. Right. In today's episode titled 310, Watching the Cops Roll By, I'm going to talk about a workshop I attended this week about black men's mental health. And before we do that, let's start with some quotes and some randomness. Damn. Now, you didn't ask for this, but my left arm is sore like a motherfucker. Now, I'm saying this by first world problems type of thing like that, because I got the flu shot and the COVID. And not to scare you and things like that, but I'm just saying, homegirl did warn me, the nurse, the lady with the needle, who injected me with the needle. I went to the pharmacy, so that's why I'm not sure if she's a nurse or whatever. It doesn't matter. And she did say, no, you're not going to get sick like your colleague told you would happen, but you might get a sore arm. That's why you want. She was like, because I got two shots, one for the flu, one for COVID. And I was like, yeah, you want to get it in your left? You want to get it in two arms or one arm? And there was something about her tone. I said, you want to be a little bitch and get it in one arm each, or you want to get it both in the same arm? And just for the record, I got them all in the same arm. I'm like, well, thug life, lady, same arm. And then now she's doing it. Like, what's the side effect? No, what's not the side effect? What's why do I want on the side? Whatever. It's essentially she gave me a heads up that my arm would be feeling sore for a few days. I'm not used to discomfort, but that's not what we're talking about. Quotes and randomness. Off topic. All right. Quotes and randomness. So like I said, quotes is reading some quotes to reflect on. And next, followed through with some randomness, which is just random shit I found on the internet and share thoughts on. All right, so let's start with quote. First one goes, friendship is unnecessary like philosophy, like art, like the universe itself. It has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things which give value to survival. C.S. Lewis. Powerful. I could do a whole randomness on this, but I'm going to skip it for now. All right, next quote goes, This quote I got from the workshop, and he said, "Those who judge you don't care about you." Powerful. Last one is, I guess you can say that the theme of mental health is on today's episode, and it goes up. It's challenging to ask about how you're doing mentally, since it's an invisible injury. People can't see it. So it's harder to understand, but I think that's why it's so important we feel empowered to open up about it. Simone Biles. I read that right. Biles. Yeah, Simone Biles. It reminded me of, real quick, because it reminded me of when I applied for a long story. I won't go into the details, but I needed to apply for long-term disability. I was working on the form. Working on the form to apply for it, right? And since you got to convince the insurance, it's like, yes, I got a bobo in my feelings. Give me money. But I remember how when I was writing it, I feel like it was somewhere I read it said it's harder. It's harder to apply for long-term disability when it involves a burnout, mental health issues. That's essentially what I'm trying to get at. Because essentially all they see is, oh, what, your little feelings got hurt, eh? Oh, and you're black? Your little feelings, someone call you nigger? Is that why you are? Okay, yeah, let's give you some money. Fuck you. Reject. All right. All right, that's it for quotes. Let's jump into randomness.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
First bit of randomness. All right. Gang, you know what? Today's episode was, I was going to talk, I'm going to mess up her name, Kiara Bro. I was going to, it's in the news about a woman in Toronto, actually not just a woman, but a content creator. Her name's Kiara Bro. She's well-known. Actually, she's well-known to you, but she's well-known on the internet. And, an incident that happened to her at a club where she was punched in the face by a bouncer at a, what's it called? So some club. Now, I'm not going to talk about the incident because the internet, like, said enough shit about it. But my intention, I was going to talk about the reaction, specifically the reaction to her speaking about it and what it means to be a human being. I'm not going to do it this episode because it's I'm still processing thoughts. There's so much, like, I forget when it happened. A couple of weeks ago. But I guess it's well known. I got a colleague who brought it up. Not a colleague, who I work with. And he was working out of the Toronto office. And I just casually brought it up, and he was aware of it. And he's not like a... I don't know. It's not the kind of news that I would have expected him to know. But my point is, I feel like it's a well-known news. So I'm likely going to talk about it in episode 311, not this one. So this randomness is just to tell you that what I'm not going to talk about in this episode. Essentially, I wanted to, but I just realized that I won't do it justice. So this is me saying stick around, all right? So stick around. So, yeah.
So you're a philosopher?
All right. Now, what I am talking about is this story doesn't make sense. I tell you what, let me just play this clip, this TikTok clip, titled the, what's it called? Analysis of Texas Plans Regarding Haiti. I'm going to, because she's inspired this randomness.
This morning I said to myself, those guys from Texas, yo compañero tap de San Lago Nav, and they were going to take over the island, and that was never going to happen, right? I'm like, pangin mun kitap kite sa go down, right? But then I had a second thought. Yo te commencé a aprender creole. That's where they were going to get you. Okay? Parce que nous aimé blanc qui parle creole trop. Depuis yo di on bonjour tout le monde, comment nous yay? Mwen relay, Michael, mwen relay, Scott. That's it. Nous t'a débloqué tout bagay pour yo. Okay, you would have handed them the island parce que nous aimé blanc qui parle créole trop. Okay? That's how they would have got you. They wouldn't even need weapons. You t'a juste parlé anti créole.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, not only am I going to link this this video, which I understand that I realize that not everyone speaks Creole. Everyone who listens to this podcast speaks Creole. I think I'm going to share that combined with, let's see, how long is this next clip? The two Texas men by, Jesus Christ, come on, it's point also no. Zivi, X-E. VI, who gave a great summary of this two Texas men who had plans to invade Haiti. I'm going to link that for the short version, and I'm going to link the NPR article about this fucked up story. Gang, it's, you got to read the story, because if I tell it to you, I'll throw it. If you read the details, you're not going to believe it. It's too fucked up. It's too fucked up. But I am going to address what homegirl just said, what she spoke about. So it's a Haitian. I'm assuming she's Haitian. With that Creole, it's going to be Haitian. But yeah, essentially what she was saying is, because there's some parts she said in Creole. She said, by the way, shut up podcast. Like, you don't have to know French or Creole, but it kind of helps. All right. So she was explaining how, yeah. I'm sure like every Haitian, it's like, wait, two white dudes were going to come down with whatever fucking army they thought they had, whatever recruits they have to invade Haiti or, first of all, is it Gonaive or Gonaive? Hold on a second. Gonaive. God damn it, white. Yeah, the island of, oh, wait a minute. Le Gonaive. Hold on a second. Focus, B. Oh, no wonder I was so confused. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. Okay, sorry. Focus back. So the plan was these two white dudes from Texas had this elaborate plot to go to Haiti to take over. Like, they were going to murder all the men and then kidnap, then turn the women, and then turn the women into sex slaves and the kids into whatever, man. But it's fucked up. And it's not Haiti they were going after. They want to, like, take over an island that's off the shore that belongs to Haiti, a little island, and it's called Gonaive. The whole time I was like, Gonaive? No, it's called Gonaive. Wow. I was about to curse out the media. I've never been to the Gonaive Island. Never heard about it. Whatever, okay. Get back to the story. So what she was saying is, shit was never going to happen. But those two dudes took the time to learn some Creole. And she's right, man. Haitians love seeing white people speak Creole. Oh my God, they fall in love with them. They'll fucking, God forbid they speak Creole, dance compa, and preach the Bible. Oh my God, fucking the Boomer Haitians will give him the island. And stuff like that's what she was saying, man. Essentially, she was criticizing the people for being so fucking, what's the word there? So fucking, you know, the whole inviting white people to the cookout for doing minimum shit, for doing like basic bullshit, for doing like the bare minimum. That's our bare minimum. Oh my God, a white person who speaks Creole. Invite them to the cookout. I don't know. We don't have cookouts in Haiti. I guess it would be a carnival, whatever. yeah, man. No, it just. I have to laugh. I have to laugh at the story again. Like I said, the links are in the show notes. Trust me, you're gonna read this story. None of this shit makes sense. Yo, these kids actually learn Creole. One of them went to Thailand to go. Yo, it's fucked up, man. What? You know, it's wild. The part where I connect with these guys is I remember when I was a teenager and I went to the gym because I was preparing for the revolution. I was preparing for 1995. Me and my friends were all training because 1995 was supposed to be. Wow, I just realized 1995 was a long time ago for some of you folks. Anyway, sorry. We were training for it because it was supposed to be this big race war and we were training for that. And it's like, oh, wow, come on, brother. The revolution don't stop, whatever. And I'm just comparing to how these young men, their plans were, their equivalent was, yeah, we're going to take over Haiti. Yo, if they were smart, apparently they weren't. If they wanted to do some reconnaissance, what they should have done is go to Miami for a bit. Miami or any other state, city in the United States, because they're from Texas, right? United States that has a high Haitian population. Go to a club. just go to a club. And oh my, it's ridiculous. I just can't. The more I think about it, try to talk about it, the more I'm like, my brain is rejecting this idea. It's like refusing to cooperate with my mouth. It's like, this is some hope. The biggest one, oh, wow. You know what? I if they wanted to, like, practice, they should have, like, okay, you want to go out? Come to Montreal. I'm familiar with the Haitians of Montreal and Dana. Okay, the funny thing is, I remember in my teens, I live in Ottawa, and a lot of, like, allegedly, folks from Montreal would come down to Ottawa to sell. I'm not saying there was a crack epidemic, but they were like a lot of the drug dealers from Montreal were coming to Ottawa to sell their drugs. And because they planted themselves in Ottawa, they had their presence and they developed a reputation of being the guys you don't fuck with. And I remember trying to blend in. Again, I was a young team trying to blend in with those guys, hoping like their tough guy reputation would rub off me. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. Okay. Sometimes it felt like the bad boys, because not all Haitians are bad boys, you know, got the sensitive whatever, right? But the circle I was in, I felt like such an outcast. Because I was not the fighting type. In my mind, I was. I mean, that's the image I portrayed, or white people allowed me to portray. Because he's black, he must be dangerous. So I rode off there. But if, like, some white dude who was, like, what's the word? Thoroughbred white dude would have, like, called my bluff, I would have been fucked. So, yeah, you can fight? Come on. Come on. That's the way I like it. I'm trying to do an Eddie Murphy impression. Oh, where I was going with this is sometimes I felt like my Haitian brethren, the tough guys, the gangsters and all that, the ones who a lot of them ended up in jail, deported, or turned to Jesus. But those guys, the tough guys who I wish I would, I felt like they were Dothrakis. They were the Dothrakis, the tough guys, and I was the one man out going, hey, can I? Where the bitch is at, nigga? Go home. Go home, schoolboy. And whatever, man. I'm just saying. Shit. A part of me kind of wants to see that documentary. to see what the fuck. Because in my mind, the idea of taking over Haiti right now is being run by gangs. Wow. That would have been amazing. That would be amazing if they were able to. It's unfathomable. That's my brain can't process. My brain is dividing 8 by 0 right now. The idea of these two white dudes had it in their head that they were going to take over the island. What fucking movie did they watch that made them think that was, you know, like black people who look scary? It'd be like, we're going to take over the Bloods and the Crips, or we're going to take over Jamaica. Like, how the fuck did you? I'm not going to start any island wars, but there's a whole lot of other islands. Maybe that's it. They were just misjudging because I was about to spit out a whole bunch of other islands they could have gone after, but that's out of sheer ignorance. But we got the reputation, don't we? What the fuck? Wyclef? Did Wyclef not? Goddamn Carnival album. And whatever. Okay, I'll stop there because it's too much. It's too much. Check out the NPR link. Again, you're not going to believe it.
So you're a philosopher?
Oh, shit. Okay, you know what? That's it, gang. No one should realize. Yeah, I was trying to keep it short because I knew I was going to talk a lot. We're going to jump into the final say, the final part, the final say. I take a shot of Hennessy, now I'm strong enough to face the man. This nickel bag full of cess weed laced with hash. Phone call from my niggas on the other side. Two childhood friends just died. I couldn't cry. A damn shame. When will we ever change? And what remains is a 12-gauge to the brain. Argument with my boo is true. I spend more time with my niggas than I do with you. But everywhere it's the same thing. That's the game. I'll be damned if the thing changed. Fuck the fame. I'll be hustling to make a million. Lord knows ain't no love for us ghetto children. So we co-rack top, slow it down, time to stop for gas. Beat my horn for a hoochie with a proper ass. Ain't it easy? That's my motto. Drinking Tanqueray straight out the bottle. Everybody wanna know if I'm insane. My baby mama got a mind full of silly games. And all the drama got me stressing like I'm hopeless. I can't cope. Me and my homie smoking roaches, cause we broke late night, hanging out till the sunrise, getting high, rushing the cops roll by. It ain't easy.
Message.
Yo. All right, just that first verse. All right, so when I was thinking of the theme of black men's mental health, this song had me feeling like it's Pac. I'm gonna read, right? It feels like it's Pac talking about how he copes in this crazy world. I'm taking my time with this, being that, you know, we only had one randomness. I remember being in school and reading this text about la santé mentale est fragile. It must have been sixth grade or something like that. But it was, sorry, I should say this in English. Yeah, mental health is fragile. And the idea, I don't know. I remember reading that and it kind of scared me. Fast forward to the future. Yeah, now I'm like, oh, shit. Fast forward to the future where I'm doing grown-up shit, taking care of my own thing, where the life that my parents, school, and everything try to prepare me from is now here. And I'm like, oh, now I see what they meant. When I talk about the reason I chose Watching the Cops Roll By as the title of today's episode is it reminds me of the idea, or I have an image of, because that's, you know, that's how the song ends, Watching the Cops Roll. But to me, I have an image of Pac with his friends smoking roaches, exhaling, you know, inhaling weed and watching the cops roll by. And the thing is, cops are supposed to symbolize, or supposed to represent serve, and protect. They're supposed to be a member of the community. But for black people, the burden bearers of this society, I use that term from Farrakhan, the burden bearers, our reality is different. We've experienced this world, this part of the world differently compared to white people. Like for white people, it all makes sense. It's all, everything is fair, everything is beautiful. Sure, there's a bit of hustle. Sure, there's a few bumps on the road. But for the most part, this system is great. To make my point is, there's this video that made me laugh before I was before I recorded, and it's this it's this brown dude. I'm assuming he's Mexican, but this brown dude. It's one of those shows where I think he's shoplifting. He's got a cart full of shit. And he's heading towards his car. And then there's a white lady at a distance going, put that back. Yelling at, put that back. And he, I guess he's intimidated. He's like shocked. He goes, oh shit, I'm caught. He leaves the shopping cart, runs to his car. And then there's another group of black people on the other end going, yo, take your shit. take your shit. And he runs back. And look. But it just shows the dynamic, like the white lady. There's another white woman who's like trying to stop him from getting in his car. Like she's defending the system, and the black folks are like, man, fuck them, pimp the system, fuck this system. Do you know what I mean? It made me think of this white dude who and coworker who took offense to me saying there's. How do I say it? Stealing from a corporation is not the same as stealing from someone else. Whatever. He took offense to that. And at the time, I was like, because I grew up with people who were like, who understood that dynamic. But him, it's like, no, it's one or two. Let me get back to you. It's, I'm use another line by Talal Macy. He says, this society doesn't give a fuck about me. Unless I'm hanging from a basketball rim or a tree. So, right, I'm getting back. Watching the cops roll by, it's that dynamic. It's, to a white person, watching the cops roll by, they're like, hey, officer, they're signaling. To a black person, it's like, ah, shit. You're like vigilant. You're like, is this going to be some bullshit? Is this going to be my life? Is this going to be the cop who takes my life? Or puts me in jail, or who, whatever. Like, it's, you know, it's, okay, the other reason I love about that verse is because it's Tupac rapping about how he's coping in this society, but for me, it's, in addition to that, is watching the cops roll by reminded me of, yes, my first visit in therapy. On one end, it's, I had reached my limit of how much can a nigga take. I had reached that limit. Like, I was like, I've reached that limit of how much can a nigga take? This is it. I can't take anymore. I'm done. And I remember my first day in therapy was pretty much explaining how this world is fucked up. Cops are against the society. All this is like, I'm just letting it out. I'm like, I can't be strong anymore. Cause that's, as a black person, you're told that you gotta roll with the punches. You gotta like twice as hard. You gotta like your life is hard. You gotta like the tough gets going. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going. I'm like, I'm out of tough. I'm done. I remember having this and granted, this might have been the weed doing this to me, but I had this experience where I got so high. I was high and my mental health state. And the state that I was in, I remember having an image, not a dream, but having an image. I was at a friend's house, getting home, and I was freaking out. Inside, not outside, but I was freaking out. I was scared to like leave those doors or go from home. I had an image of me confronting a cop are getting pulled over. This was the image. Blacking out and waking up to pain. Waking up on the floor with my back's behind my hand and the cops putting handcuffs on me, talking about stop resisting. Now, in this image, I don't know if I provoked the situation or if I'm in the situation that, if I caused the situation or if the cops caused it, but I was freaking out of watching the cops roll by. I had reached my limit. I bring this up because I remember when, it's funny, yeah. So when I attended this workshop, I signed up for it, made time to go to it. And I remember at the beginning feeling so freaking awkward. Feeling so, because the dude was, two reasons. One is, I felt like homeboy was about to say some shit that I would usually feel comfortable hearing in a barbershop. I hated the idea of, he kept repeating black man's mental health. What is black man's mental health? And then like I hated the attention. I felt like it was like, let's talk about B Black's mental health. Like focused on me. Part of me was like, hey, leave me the fuck alone. Funny, I'm the one who signed up for it, but I was feeling like I was like in an intervention. And I felt like fighting. I felt like I'm not used to all eyes on me. And this is not a pity thing, but I didn't realize until then, like, this is, it's not, I'm used to living in a society that doesn't give a fuck about us. Just cope with it, deal with it. Deal with your problems, like suffer in silence, shut the fuck up. So it just felt so weird. And then all these people talking about, yes, black mental health is important and stuff like that. It just felt like I was being pitied. That's what it was. And I think what helped set the tone is at some point, the facilitator was explaining something about, can't remember what the fact was, but he was saying like, this happens to black men. And someone in the comment section, excuse me, in the chat section, because this was an MS team, so remote. This guy was in Vancouver. I'm in Ottawa. And he was explaining something. And someone in the comment section said, yeah, this also happens to black women. And he wasn't rude about it, but it's like he focused the conversation. He said, like, hey, you're right. I understand. But the words he used, he said, like, but if we're going to talk about this topic, I'm going to need you guys to be comfortable to, what's the word he used? He said, to be okay with talking about it. It was another way of saying, yo, stop this all lives matter shit. I don't know. The way he said it, and it was for the first time I felt like I heard him. It's like, yo, brothers, a lot of you, the way you deal with your mental health is, the reason we're focused on you is to talk to you about your coping mechanisms. Take a shot of Hennessy. Take a shot of Hennessy. Now I'm strong enough to face the badness. Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about why you feel the need to do that. But we're going to focus on you. Yes, our people are struggling, but we need to focus our attention on you. It was a magical moment. Again, he wasn't rude about it, but it was like, I guess another way I could say it's like, yeah, let's talk about, there's another way I could explain it. This is not his word, but this is me reiterating. It's like, yo, sure, black women, maybe we can talk about all the issues that are caused by black men. But in this section, we're going to talk about, what I was going to say is we're going to talk about what causes you to be problematic. Now I know it sounds like you're saying, what can we do to make you a better person? No, it's like, let's talk about what's causing you to be a fucked up person. And dude, it was honestly, it was needed. It was, I remember starting from, this is some bullshit, even though I'm the one who signed up for it, to being like, okay, homie, this got my attention. When he did that, it's like God saying, yo, I need to focus on you, pointing at you. Like, I feel like, was it Zashi? He reached right down and touched me. So I'm trying to sing Nicole's gospel singer, whatever. Anyway, all this to say that I appreciated he did that. Because it helped reframe, refocus my mind on the topic. And it helped me bear through the awkwardness. But still, knowing that there was white people in the room kind of made it the shit a little bit awkward. It's like, yeah, shut up, you know. The comment section wasn't helping. But it was a great, I'm telling you what I'm getting at. It was a great workshop. Now that I started out, this shit is whack. Fuck am I here for? I got a therapist. To, yo, this brother knows what. Like, it's to the point I might reach out to the brother. Out of everything that got my attention, there's two things. And I'm gonna, the major takeaways, right? Or the biggest two things that got my attention, because I'm not going to summarize the whole thing. But the part where one incident, he was explaining an incident that happened to him is how he was in a meeting with his white colleagues, and someone in the meeting, a white person, said something inappropriate, something racist, but not about black people, but about just something racist, period, about another group. He didn't go into the details, but just said, but you could just picture the scenario. And, you know, and he just said, hey, he just spoke out. It's funny, because I would have, because I'm used to, like, just shutting down and being like, hey, fucking cracker. But, yeah, he just spoke out and said, yo, dog, that shit's inappropriate. And I forget what happens next, but it essentially shit escalates to his manager. His manager's like, oh, this is serious. I think he told his manager, yo, that's fuck. You gotta nip this shit in the bud. Manager, what does he do? He organizes or he sets up a mediation between him, the facilitator who's black, with his white colleague. And he's like, I don't know what this is about, but he still goes. He attends. He shows up to the meeting, and then they, everyone, all eyes on him. It's like, so, how do you want to handle this situation? He's like, what the fuck? And I love this analogy he used. He said, it's like, if you stab someone, there's no mediation. Yeah, let's talk about this. That knife you used, yeah, it was like, could you have used a kitchen knife instead? Because that blade was kind of long. Where the excuse me. And this, I think, this is where he got all our attention. Then he said that, because he explained, he goes, I'm not I forget what he told them, but essentially he was like, look, all I said was, what he said was inappropriate. Point, but I can't get any clearer than that. And then the white dude who said the racist shit bursts out into tears. Talking about, oh, fuck, why am I being called racist? I'm fucking, my favorite basketball player is black. I'm reiterating, I'm putting it in my own words. He didn't say all this shit, but you know, black people, you can just picture it, right? But when a white person is accused of racism, feels accused of racism, defensive mode, like right fragility to the top. By the way, this podcast, if you're that white boy, fuck you too. All right, so yeah, burst into tears. He's like all indignant, why are you calling me racist? So I'm the one who deserves an apology and all this. I'm the victim in this shit. And the reason why this story got my attention is because I also was in a situation where a racist incident happened to me at work. And I, involving two people, and I remember, like, just writing it up, but essentially just, yo, telling my manager, I said, yo, I can't work with these two motherfuckers. That's pretty much, just wrote a letter saying, or, you know, explain how, can't work, I reached my limit, you know, oh, but this was in 2020, George Floyd just happened, so I'm, like, peak racism. I'm like, someone might die. I'm in a mindset that I don't only willing to take my own life, but I'm also thinking of taking people with me. I was like in that kind of mindset. I want to take motherfuckers with me. and whatever. And of course, I didn't put that in the letter, but I remember with that anger, there was probably the small productive thing that I did was in that mindset was just saying, "Yo, refusing to work with these two." And then so, true typical white folk, white organization, they were like, "All right, okay, so." Shit gets escalated, and one person proposes, "Hey, how about mediation?" I think they got proposed three times. Would you, first time, yeah, mediation? I'm like, fuck that. Because the first image that I had was Deb sitting across the table from these white folk, and I knew it was going to go into tears. I was thinking on that white news anchor who made a comment about her black colleague. I forget the name, but essentially she said, "Hey, that monkey looks like you," some shit like that. And then in the next episode, this white bitch is just apologizing in tears. "I didn't mean to call you a monkey," whatever. So I had an image of being in that situation. So I was like, hell the fuck no. Fuck no. I was waiting for, "You're not being cooperative," but whatever. I was, hell no. First time I was like, it was a kind, nah, it's not going to happen. Second time, I remember I was, oh my God, I was at limit. I was, what did I tell this? I remember the words said, "Look, my humanity's not up for a fucking debate. I'm not going in mediation and have these, and then be in a situation where I'm like, yeah, you know, when you said nigger, well, you know, I, no fucking, how, there's no words. It's, anyways." I just remember connecting to that anger, to that feeling. The third time I put it, the third time they asked, I remember saying, I was like straight dry in my response and being like, fuck that. I'm not giving you the exact words, but it was professionally written, but it accumulated to fuck that. Fuck you and your mediation. Fuck you. Fuck these white folks and wanting to mediate racism. Like, how much shit could a nigga take? But yeah, overall, this great, great workshop, man. I was just reading, like, when he was explaining that incident, and I nearly went into a rage, and I had to remind myself, B, you're not in the barbershop. There are white folks around. So when he was explaining that story, all I said was, that's how they do. It was my website. I saw that shit coming. I knew any mediation involving racism will be unproductive. I mean, it might make white people, I'll make white people happy, but the fuck, on the flip side, nah, man. I'll stop. Okay, I'll stop there. I'll stop. It was a great workshop. There was a last thing that he said that stuck in my mind, and he used the word 256, 257, what's the, whatever. And he's got this, I guess I should have looked this up, but it's not curated. But he got this like philosophy or this worldview from he's a part of Vancouver. There's like a certain tribe of First Nations people, and they have this philosophy, this idea of how you're a product of seven generations. Or as if they look at the world through in the context of the seven generation that came before them. I thought that shit was powerful. And I had to look it up. I had to look it up. What I mean by looking up, I said I was thinking about what year would my the seventh generation ancestor be in. I used AI for it, and it estimated that they would be around the year of 1770 and 1820. I'll tell you what, let me look this up. 17, this doesn't matter, but here's where the real point, the reason why I was asking about seventh generation ancestor is I'm like, they would either be one of three things. Okay, my parents are from Haiti, or were born in Haiti. So we're talking my parents, my grandparents, And then great-great-grandparents would be fifth. And then four or five. So my five-time great-grandparents. That would be estimated birth of 1965 to 1790. Sorry, okay, yeah, I hate approximately. And they would have either been, hold on a sec, either enslaved, child of an enslaved, or, and this is the part that got my attention, the one that really, like, I nearly cried, it said, or born in Africa and survived the transatlantic slave trade, like survived that journey. Reading those words for a brief moment, I felt connected with that ancestor, that seventh generation ancestor. I felt like the phone, like, ring, hey, be black, it's me. What do you mean you're complaining about your bed not being comfortable? Let me tell you what I went through. Yeah, man, I'm like, I was going to make a joke about, you know, they must look down on me on my convenience. But but like I said, I felt for a brief moment the idea of, it's like I saw a human being. I stopped thinking about slave. I saw a human being, the words of random human being on the continent of Africa who survived the Middle Passage. Yo, I read a lot about the slave trade, and yeah, man, it's enough to make you cry. Surviving that journey, that's fucked up. That's wow. Trauma and shit. Anyways, I'm gonna end with this poem that I found on TikTok, and on the idea of feeling connected to the connecting with the ancestors. And it's called Worship in the West, Hurricane in the East. And I will, name of the content creator, I will give you her name afterwards. But I'm just going to share this because her poem, I feel, ties into the idea of connecting with the ancestors. But yeah, like I said, great workshop. From this workshop to now, talking about the ancestors.
Worship's in the West. Hurricanes in the East. When people ask me, Jade, why are you so passionate about storytelling? Why do you do what you do? My answer is, warships in the West, hurricanes in the East. And if you stick with me, I promise you this will make sense. Just lend me your ear for a little bit. But when I watch Belle, the feeling that comes over me that is bigger than my body, and I'm gonna try to do this video without getting emotional. And I know I'm not the only person. For you, it might not be Belle, it might be Guka or Dinky Mini or Jonkunu or Bomba. It could be any of those things, but you feel that connection to a place that you have never been, to people you have never met. Even all of us in the Caribbean, when we dress in our madras. Madras was a town in India, now known as Chennai. We all rock this and tie our heads like the West Africans do in the cloth that came from India. When you're looking at things like the Mokojumbi and Bwa Bwa and Jab Jab, these things are passed down to us from people who survived warships in the West, hurricanes in the East. I know I feel it when I look at the Kalinago dances, and you might feel it when you look at the Garifuna dance or the Taino dance. Since 1492 October, imagine them on their islands, their homes. After being vigilant of the hurricanes in the East, they look to the West and they see European ships coming to enslave them, to rob them, exploit them, eliminate them, tell them that they can't practice their heritage, can't speak their tongue, and they held on to it. Imagine being a mother, a father, an inventor, a dreamer, a poet, snatched from the shores of West Africa, put on a boat for 4 months, dropped into the middle of nowhere in a place that you don't know, with people you don't know and languages you can't speak, and put on a plantation to work day in and day out. These people who put you there are drilling into you that you are nothing, you are no one, all you exist is as a beast of burden. You can't practice your tongues, you can't practice your culture, you can't beat the drums, you can't sing the songs, you can't say the things, you can't call on your God. But you hold on to what you can, despite warships in the West and hurricanes in the East, because you're thinking about the people that you've left behind. The ones who have died, the ones who mourn you, and you hold on for the people ahead. Generation after generation, you're thinking of them. So you transfer what you've kept. And just like transferring sand from hand to hand, some things slip, some things get lost, because you're transferring while surviving torture and slavery and genocide and colonialism and warships in the West and hurricanes in the East. But you do it anyway because they're thinking about the ones behind who passed it on to them, and they want to make sure the ones in front stay connected to the ones behind, even if they're warships in the West and hurricanes in the East. And year after year, generation after generation, decade after decade, century after century, they transfer in spite of warships in the West and hurricanes in the East until they get to us. You and me. It's 2025 and there are still warships in the West and hurricanes in the East. But this time they are bigger and deadlier. So you know what we have to do with our portion? We do what our ancestors could not do. We plant and we project. Because if the warships in the West and the hurricanes in the East are getting bigger and deadlier, so must we. We plant ourselves in places and gardens that they cannot touch, that they cannot excavate. We plant ourselves in all nooks and crannies of the world so our forests are so vast that they cannot possibly eliminate us. Whether here or we use the airways or the satellites, we will be here forever. And we will spread and expand. We project ourselves, whether it be on the TV screens, in films, in movies, on the airwaves, in books, in media, on your phones, everywhere you look, we will be there because they're getting bigger and they're getting deadlier. But guess what? So will we. So why do I do what I do? It's because of these warships in the West and these hurricanes in the East. It's because of the people I'm connected to behind me, and it's for the people who are in front of me. It's my job to take this portion and plant it, protect it, and project it for the day when there will not be warships in the West and hurricanes.
Y'all feel that? Content creator's name is Jade the Gemini. I strongly recommend, suggest that you check out the actual video because there's like, check the video because there's actually visual, how do you say that? Not slides, but there's a video accompaniment to complement her message, what she's saying. Worship in the West, hurricanes in the East. Things that don't change. But yeah, man, no, but it just, when I, the connection to the ancestors, when I see like indigenous, not just indigenous, but people, especially indigenous and African, but practicing traditions from the past, I feel like it's, that's a connection with the ancestors, with their ancestors. Like that's them talking to each other from the past to the future. Like, cause you got to remember these, all these dance moves, these cultures, like it was, it came up as an idea by someone, a group of people, and they held on to those dance steps, those songs, food, and it's still today. It's like a it's what remains. It's the things we didn't lose, like the drums. They are powerful, man. It's powerful. All right, I spoke long enough. Yeah, that's how good the seminar was. I'm still talking about it. All right, okay. This concludes today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. I want to remind you that the website is shutuppodcast.com and the email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Before I end the show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green with the red, black, and the red, blue.
Who's that blue?
I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario and Télé-Québec. I also represent and hold it down for black folks who say yes to Big Rube's question.
Are you an outcast?
Are you an outcast? This episode was rated R and F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Like I said, if at any point in this podcast I said anything that you didn't like, clear reminder that it's my goddamn podcast. My goddamn podcast. That includes things you did like but didn't like the way I said it. Plug Out Dead Podcast. Thank you for listening. And remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. All right. Peace. I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all.